are live. Welcome to episode 28 of To the Unknown Pod. My name is Jordan Bush. I'm the executive director of TGFB Media, and today I'm joined by two of the Island Boys, Oshua Hawthorne and Ryan Finley. I'll let you guys introduce yourself.
Hey, all. Oshua Hawthorne, founder of Brilliance Labs. We're a Christian startup incubator, and we like to pursue solutions for problems being faced in the world, and we think Bitcoin's one of those creative solutions.
Hey, I'm Ryan Finley, entrepreneur, father of six, and yeah, it's good to be here. Good to have you back, Osh.
How many kids do you have, Jordan?
I have five as of 2 days ago. Hey, so we have my little daughter who shall remain unnamed for the sake of online privacy. She was born. We are thrilled that she joined us. It was a surprise. My wife loves to wait till the very end or wait till the birth to find out the gender. And so we forced her gender upon her at about 2:30 a.m. On Sunday. So yeah, it was great. My older daughter, so my second oldest, caught the baby as was planned.
Wow.
So she did a great job. And then my prior to the new baby, my youngest cut the umbilical cord when it was time. So he was a stud. The oldest was the first one to hold her. And then I can't remember what my middle guy, I can't remember what his responsibility was. Everybody, we had like division of responsibility. So mom, that's and cool. Baby are doing well. Grateful for you guys and for your prayers. So we are here. We are here for episode 28. Can you even believe it? Episode 28. Matt is still not with us. Matt is with his family, touring around Italy. He's just enjoying, spending some good time out there, just having lots of fun. I believe he'll be there for a total of a month, which he's got to be, I think he's only like got another
two months.
This guy, my word. So yeah, he's out there having a good time. He should join us again soon. But we're again, for those of you who this is your first time stumbling across this, where in the world are you? What we do is we spend time on Twitter every week. And so rather than just have those periods just disappear into the ether, we try to redeem the time. And so we use this podcast these podcast episodes as a way to kind of debrief and talk about things that we found, especially thought-provoking or helpful. And so this week, episode 28, we're going to be talking about atomized individualism. And atomized individualism and subsidized injustice. There's been a ton of stories in the news that intersect with both of these topics. And so we're just going to jump right in here and chat about them. So the first thing we have is a poll from NBC News. I know this is, for those of you who are regular listeners, NBC News is probably not a source of news you were anticipating us referencing, but listen, we love to surprise. So here we are. A new NBC poll gave Gen Z a list of choices of how to define personal success. Men who backed Donald Trump in 2024 rated having children at the top. Women who backed Kamala Harris rated it second to last. Okay, so let's take a look at this. Take a look at this thing here. So women who voted for Kamala Harris or voted Democrat, they've rated having a job or a career you find fulfilling as the most important criteria of their determining success. Men who voted for Harris, very similar. Women who voted for Trump, achieving financial independence was their top thing. And then men who voted for Trump, voted on having children as a sign of success. This is wild. We can see down here, marriage is number four among those who voted for Trump, men who voted for Trump. Women, we finally see it mentioned at number six, they're having children. It's down for men who voted for Harris. We have down at 9 and 10 have anything to do with marriage and having children. And for women who voted for Harris, you have it down at 11 and 12. Ash, this is one of the tweets that you shared. Why did this stick out to you?
I mean, just wow. So first I would say it's like not surprising as like the difference there, but the how extreme it is, how stark the contrast is. And so I spent some time thinking about it after I saw that. And And I was on a call with a couple other Christians, a guy and a gal, a little older than me. And they were talking about their adult kids. And they both happen to have daughters. And they mention that, and their daughters are, I think, mid-30s, down like the mid to lower 20s. And I don't remember how many were married, but only like the minority of them were married and none of them had kids. So two different Christian grandparent age people with no grandkids and seven kids among the two of them. And it just struck me like, wow, okay, no grandkids. And I shared these stats with them. And I said, well, okay, this kind of confirms some of this. And there was another poll that came out a couple weeks ago or like a month ago about how today 12% of 30-year-olds are married and own their house versus something like 50% back in the 50s. And so I shared this and I said, hey, this kind of connects to your experience, right? You have daughters, and I don't know their political affiliations. I don't know even what their parenting styles were. But what I found most interesting is when they saw these stats, which kind of confirmed the experience that they had of their adult daughters, the reasons that they gave. So the mom says, well, you know, when I was young, we didn't think twice. You just assumed you got married young and you started having kids. That was just what everyone did. And she says, well, now the younger generations realizes that they have a choice. They can kind of do different things with their life. They can pursue a career and it's just not assumed that they need to get married and have kids. And so that was her perspective was just, oh, they have options now. And
they've been liberated.
Yeah, exactly. And she put a positive tone and a spin on that reality. And then the guy, the potential grandfather who wasn't a grandfather yet, he says to me, well, it's the fascism. It's Donald Trump taking away people's freedom. And so, of course, no one wants to have kids and bring kids into the world in such a hostile environment. And that's the reason that he gave.
It was climate change and climate doomerism back in the 70s,
no,
remember?
That's exactly what so my response was,
it's always different.
I said, fear-mongering, we've had fear-mongering of why you shouldn't have kids my entire life. And exactly, you go through all the reasons. For a while, it was nuclear war. Then it was global warming. Then it was holes in the ozone layers.
Or acid rain.
Yeah, acid rain, peak oil. It's overpopulation. It's like, think of the animals. There's always been a list. And then it's the wrong parties in charge. So you got to like move to Canada. Or if you're Rosie O'Donnell, I think she went to Germany or something. Like you gotta go somewhere else if the wrong party's in charge. So that's obviously not the real reason. And so I'm curious, if it's not about just more options and better options and bad politics, why are particularly progressive young women making this decision to not have kids and get married?
I just think we want to pretend like we're all very intelligent and smart and that the environment that we're in and the educational environment and the music you listen to and the media you consume and the movies you consume, like we want to act like we can totally separate and parse those things out. And the reality is that you cannot. Like what you watch, what you like, the people who you are trained to respect, to look up to, whatever, you will become them. Okay. Like it's not, again, if the only way in which that is not true. Now, again, how can I say that with such certainty? Well, because sowing leads to reaping. Like God is not mocked. You reap what you sow. That is going to happen. The only way that will not happen is if you are sowing other, if you're sowing other, sowing respect to other places, and those things are mutually exclusive. Like there's other people. So if you're sowing, for example, if you're sowing God, sowing seeds of respect and, you know, love for God, then those can produce fruit as well. Those will produce fruit that can, including in a, even if they're not disproportionately so, you know, they can still produce good fruit by the mercy and grace of God. I talked about this on one of our previous episodes. I went to public school. I had parents who loved the Lord, but I went to public school, and I mean, I could, again, my mother, I was talking to her today about the baby. We introduced the baby over Zoom or over, you know, calls or was a video call. And she mentioned that she had been listening to one of my podcasts, and I immediately thought of the clip that I had seen mentioning that, like, my mother would be mortified if she knew half of the worst things that happened in public school. And I just think, like, when I look back at my time in middle and high school and the things that went down, and just the, you know, like, it is truly the mercy and grace of God. And again, we were involved in church. You know, my parents loved the Lord. They would talk about things with us, but still the sheer amount of time that I spent, you know, in the hands of, with my mind being submersed in, you know, with ideas that are completely hostile to reality. It is stunning to me. And it should be stunning to all of us that there isn't more damage being done. And with that being said, there still is tons of damage that's been done. You know, one of the things that the scriptures talk about is the need for the renewing of your mind. And obviously there's a component of that which happens supernaturally. When you come to faith in Christ, like, you know, the Lord opens up the eyes of your heart, opens up your mind, you know, and just basically starts to, you know, he basically moves you from the kingdom of darkness to the kingdom of his beloved son. He starts doing all this supernatural work. And at the same time, and so there's a temptation for especially certain denominations to put an emphasis on that supernatural work. And that's good to a point. The problem is the scriptures are also super clear about there being a reaping and sowing effect. And so if you continue to submerge your mind in falsehood, and you continue to lend credence and you know, allow yourself to be influenced by lies and just by people who are wrong about the way that the world works, like, you are going to see your mind conformed to the way that a lot of the world thinks, and you're going to be conformed to the falsehoods that the world falls into. And so again, it's hilarious to me and heartbreaking at the same time that some of the people who claim, especially on the progressive side, again, there are plenty of falsehoods and errors on the right among those who, you know, would you know, vote for Republican candidates or whatever. They have their own issues. But some of the people who claim to be the most enlightened, they all think the exact same thing. And for you to not believe what they believe, they cannot handle it. They will scream at you. They will try to get you canceled. They'll do all these kind of things. And so again, all of these things, they're all these ideas are producing just a ton of danger and a ton of just groupthink and fear of people. We're going to get to some of the consequences of that here in a little bit. But yeah, I just think we underestimate the degree to which we are influenced and shaped and led by our broader culture.
Amen. Yeah. No, I think it's, it'd be very interesting. I don't know, like, we underestimate the power of the world's influence, both through education and through peers. Mm-hmm. I thought it was interesting that it still seems like amongst conservative voters from that poll, it still seems like women were influenced more by the world than the young men. Do you guys see that? And I'm just throwing it out there that I feel like we might have hit this tipping point for young men that things have gotten so absurd, even in the public education space that you have young men that, again, their parents, even conservative parents, have sent their kids to public school, and they're seeing things are so insane that they're like, dude, this is like, they're like throwing their hands up, like, all right, I'm out. Like, and they're checking out. And so it's skewing the numbers towards young males, which is awesome to see. It's also sad because it's like, dude, that's a pretty crazy low to hit.
Yep.
That on their own, like through their own, like, this is like young men's nationals, like these are probably young men that were like encouraged to apologize for being white, for wanting to be masculine, for wanting to lead, things like that. Like, at a certain point, you're just like, what in the heck are these guys what were these people talking about? Like, I was born this way. Anyways, I think, so more young men are just like, are saying, yeah, this is bogus and rejecting it. So, which is skewing the numbers, in my opinion.
One other thing that I would want to add, I'm going to bring that chart back up here because this is a Bitcoin podcast, ostensibly. And so I do want to kind of, I don't feel like we have to, you know, tie everything back to Bitcoin. But one of the things that I want to just point out is think about the time horizon. Think about the time preference being displayed by these things by these values. So if having children, and again, even an even better indicator, I would say this could even be deficient because like raising children and, you know, like, I mean, you know, like having children is a very low time preference activity. You know, the first few years, the children are cute and, you know, difficult in one way, but then they get more difficult in different ways as they grow older. And so, you know, thinking about marriage and thinking about having kids, you're focused on the long term. Some of these other things, it's just like, I mean, like, look at this. I'm looking at the number three here. So having money to do the things that you want to do. It's like, okay, the things that I want to do over what time horizon, right? If you're talking about, I want to go have fun with my friends, well, that's a very high time preference desire. Having a career job, you could argue that that's more of a long-term, you know, low time preference thing. You know, this takes time to get education. It takes your time to work your way up, whatever. So maybe that's not the worst. But I mean, a lot of these things, I just think a lot of these things, it's people thinking for the longer term. I mean, we've talked about this a number of times on the podcast, but just, again, I remember having a conversation with a friend of ours who's a believer, you know, loves the Lord and, you know, is married, already has kids. And we just were talking about the fact that, you know, one of the reasons historically why you've had kids is so that you could have someone to take care of you when you got older. You know, that's not the only motivation that you would have kids, but it certainly was one of the motivations because, again, you're going to get old. The reality is that, you know, contrary to America, where we don't talk about getting old, we don't talk about dying at all, we're going to get old. And you're not going to have the vast majority of people, due to currency devaluation, debasement, all this kind of stuff, you're not going to have enough money to retire. Or like, you're not going to necessarily have enough money to go into a retirement home and stay there for any length of period of time, nor are you going to want to do that. And so I just think so many people are just totally underestimating and have just been so gaslit and fed just high time preference lies. And, you know, you have to have this car, you have to have this kind of clothes, you have to go to have these experiences. And you're literally missing out on the time period where you could be having kids at an age when you're young, you know, and where you're going to be able to enjoy each other and, you know, do a lot of these things. You're just totally being gaslit into missing out of some of these things that for so many people all throughout history, this has been a huge source of finding meaning and sort a huge source of joy and a huge source of, you know, a number of different things. And so again, I just look at this and it is just, it's heartbreaking. And again, the chickens are going to come home to roost. The chickens are going to come home to roost here within the next 10 years. People are going to realize, oh shoot, you know, I missed out on my window, or I'm still going to do this. And then they're going to turn to increasingly dystopian ways to try to make up for lost time, which is, you know, some of the there's a lot of the, you know, ways to have kids that exist and that are out there that are morally dubious and that we should get into in a future episode.
So the scriptures say, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. And I would argue that you can see the heart of this issue at what has replaced being married and having children in the lives of these women. So it's entirely inverse. It's upside down. And they've stopped believing that children are a blessing and have instead put fulfilling job, career, and having money to do the things you want as number one and two, and then having emotional stability, self-care, right? So I've bought into the world's lie that I can be like a man. I can have a fulfilling meaning and identity through climbing the corporate ladder, getting rich, and then the unknown, unexpected consequence is I feel like I'm going crazy. I'm trying to live my life in a way I'm not designed to, and so I'm an emotional wreck. And so now that's why number three is emotional stability, because they feel unstable. If you're emotionally just fine, that doesn't even make the list, right? So they're making themselves go crazy because they're living contrary to how God designed them, and their heart is in greed and finding a fulfilling life through what consumerism can purchase them. And I would argue, and Ryan, you can take on this if you want, it goes all the way back to the sexual revolution and into the late 60s, early 70s. And this whole idea of, okay, women need to not find identity. Sorry, I need to get some water. Here, I got some water. I'll finish the thought and then you jump on. So what happened in 1971? Okay, every Bitcoiner is going to say, well, we got off the gold standard. And then they're going to sync up all these charts to show all the economic and social mayhem that emerged at that point. Well, Ryan, what else happened right around that time that could be another causation for the breaking down of society?
Yeah, I mean, there was, you know, probably one of the biggest ones was no-fault divorce. I think it says that California's 1969 law was a pioneer. The wave of states adopting no-fault divorce swept through the nation through the 70s. This allowed for the unilateral dissolution of marriage for vague reasons like irreconcilable differences, things like that. And I think at the root of it, the easier you make divorce, the more you undermine marriage itself as something that's just kind of optional. But again, that's undermining God's design for families, and it's undermining God's design for children to have two parents, and to grow up in a safe, secure environment. And the destruction that that's caused is like incomprehensible. And so, you had the breakdown of our money, but you also had a serious breakdown of families, back then. And I wouldn't say that, like we were talking about before we started, that wasn't the beginning of it. I mean, Satan's been out to destroy the family since the beginning of time, and to separate, to destroy. You go back, like, education of children used to be a thing that families took responsibility for. What happened with the public education? Oh, hey, you do your thing. We'll take care of educating the kids. And it's like, all of a sudden it's like, well, is it just education? And so it was like, it siloed that little compartment, and like, oh, well, it couldn't be so bad. Right. I mean, they'll teach impartial things. They won't be. And it's just like, no, it was like the full force of the world went into that education, and it had a devastating impact. I would say, you know, we've talked about it before, but it's like, of the kids I went to church with, I mean, you probably, I don't know, 75% of them walked away from the Lord that went to public school. And we had our lives filled with religious activities, going to church, youth groups, and all that kind of stuff. And so, again, like we were talking about at the beginning, and Jordan was talking about, look, we vastly underestimate the impact of separating kids from their parents and how destructive that is, and separating children from their dad or separating children from their mom. It's like, dude, it's an atomic bomb going off in the family. So,
yeah, we had World War II, okay, which World War II, what was it? When was it? Was World War I started right after the creation of the Federal Reserve in 1930. And then World War II, we ended up having, you know, we have to send men overseas. And so women have to step up and, you know, they start going to, you know, produce things for the war effort, which again, you can debate that whole thing, but you're like, all right, you know, this was ostensibly a good thing. Great. Okay, great. This is a good thing. We're all working together. And then you come home, right? And then the war ends. And you have a whole segment of society of, you know, women who've gotten this taste of, you know, productive, you know, like productive, like of working outside of the home and making money and, you know, contributing to something, you know, really important. And which, again, these are not trivial things at all. Like this is, you know, the answer is not just stay home and get in front of a stove. Like this is, and C.R. Wiley has talked about this a lot. Like they're, you know, basically that households used to be economic, little economic engines. These were, you know, you have families that would have small businesses. Yeah, they were productive. And so you did have this, you know, working together, you know, you'd have husbands and wives who were united behind a common cause and, you know, working together to make that happen. So you have that happening. And then after the war goes on, you have the temptation and, you know, lots of incentivization by the government looking at this and saying, hey, look, if we can get wives into the workplace, you know, we can significantly increase our GDP, you know, and like, again, like we can look at these stats and look how much more productive, look how much more money that we can make in these companies and all these different places. And so, again, it's this short-term focus. It's not looking at, well, what consequences is this going to have on family? Like if parents aren't raising kids, well, then somebody's going to be raising the kids. Okay, well, yeah, so it's going to be public schools or it's going to be family members or whatever. And so you're completely outsourcing the formative years of your children's lives, shaping not just their minds, but also their hearts and their loves and all these kind of other things. You're outsourcing that and putting that shaping influence in the hands of people who do not have a well-aligned incentive structure to train them and raise them in the way that you would if you were there with them. And so this is something where I think, again, we significantly underestimate the role that has played. I mean, we could mention the Roe versus Wade decision that happened in 1973. That was another thing that was right there shaped.
Something else right before that, 72 was the legalization of contraception for unmarried people. Isn't that crazy that there was a day when you had to, like, only married people could buy contraception?
Yep. Yeah. And this is, again, this sounds insane. Like, and again, if this sounds insane to you, okay, this is the crazy thing. If this sounds insane to you, it, like, first of all, you don't know history. And then second of all, like, it's just demonstrating, like, how successful the brainwashing has been to act like on the hands of our culture and governing influences to just train you in a way of looking at the world to the degree that it is unthinkable that the world could operate any other way. Like that is the thing that is again. And I think this is where, again, I really appreciate Bitcoiners. Bitcoiners have started to, and more than a lot of people, they have woken up to and see this brainwashing that's happened at certain levels, at the level of money, and then they see the downstream consequences. And I see a lot of Bitcoiners who are having families and, you know, want to have kids quicker. They don't want to, you know, they don't want to buy into these things. And yet, like, again, I just would, the thing that I see is, listen, this rabbit hole goes very, very, very deep. It goes very, very deep. And again, I would argue that Christians have a lot to add, a lot to basically contribute in this way, because again, we have a view of the world that's existed for thousands of years. You know, we have just conceptions of what the good life looks like that are laid out for us that aren't just the result of convenience over a very short time horizon. You have God who's laid out the way that the world ought to work for thousands of years. We have thousands of years of examples, both positive and negative, of the consequences of either listening to and obeying his voice or disobeying and creating our own reality. And I think that this is something that people are going to, these chickens are going to come, they're coming home to roost, and people are really, this is already what we see. People who you would never have expected, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, Russell Brand, Joe Rogan, people who were just openly mocking religion, mocking Christianity, even just a few years ago, are now kind of just seeing the consequences of just being our own gods, and are reacting against it. And so I think that, again, I'm encouraged by all these things, but it is, again, it's shocking to see the consequences. All right, so let's see here. Oshua, you've got a couple other tweets on this front. Let me share. We've already done quite a bit, but we'll just to see how long we want to spend on them. Here we go. Oshua, why don't you read this one? Yeah, here we go.
This is more to the video.
Okay.
So do the Lewis quote.
Yes, let's find it here. Share this tab instead. Okay. This is a quote from The Four Loves, from an article by American Reformer by Joe Rigney, who we're trying to get on the program here in the near future.
Yeah. So I'll just read it briefly. This is from Lewis, Four Loves. It is therefore easy to see why authority frowns on friendship. Every real friendship is a sort of secession, even a rebellion. It may be a rebellion of serious thinkers against accepted claptrap, or of faddists against accepted good sense, of real artists against popular ugliness, or of charlatans against civilized taste, of good men against the badness of society, or of bad men against its goodness. Whichever it is, it will be unwelcome to top people. In each knot of friends, there is a sectional public opinion which fortifies its members against the public opinion of the community in general. Each, therefore, is a pocket of potential resistance. Men who have real friends are less easy to manage or get at, harder for good authorities to correct or for bad authorities to corrupt. Hence, if our masters, by force or by propaganda, about togetherness or by unobtrusively making privacy and unplanned leisure impossible, ever succeed in producing a world where all are companions and none are friends, they will have removed certain dangers and will also have taken from us what is almost our strongest safeguard against complete servitude. So my quick comment about this, and Rigney uses it in reference to this idea of masculine Christianity in the public sphere and exercising kind of proactively making a difference and seeking to see Christ's kingdom and Christian ethics displayed in the public space. And he argues that, right, it can't be done alone. You need friendships. You need community. And this is where we see the breaking apart of the family and the war on children is, I would argue, Satan's primary strategy. I love how Lewis uses this idea of the top people, aka the elites, the secular pluralist elites that don't have their own kids, and so need to control yours and mine through governmental and social and media structures. The tools that they have to control only work when people are isolated. And when you have a strong family structure, a strong marriage, you have strong churches, and you have strong local neighborhoods, people stick together. They are, there's a mutual benefit. They have in symbiotic communities. And they don't have to all be, they don't have to be homogenous. They don't have to look the same. But they still have the same ends in mind. They succeed when those around them succeed. And that's what I would argue our culture and the secular society is trying to entirely separate people so that they're easier to control.
Yeah. Go ahead, Ryan.
Yeah. I'd say, yeah. Yeah. You definitely see it with, I feel like the influence of the world, especially on children, is so strong that it's only intentional parents that can overcome it. And I say that as I used to be a youth pastor, and I had this realization, I don't know, it was probably a year or so in, spending 60 hours a week pouring into my kids. And I had this realization that, like, it didn't matter how hard I worked and how much time I spent, like, it was almost impossible to overcome the enormous influence that parents have on their children, or that they don't have. Like, you know, it's the vacuum of, like, if they're not influencing their kids, the enormous influence that the world, the people they hang out with, their peers, where they're being educated, that influence is so great that it's just like, I literally, I know it wasn't all wasted, but it just felt like vanity. And so I see it. It's who we hang out with every day is actually really, really important. Where we spend our time and who we spend our time with.
Yeah, it really, I mean, just what we're all getting at is just the sense of identity and the sense of just, you know, the question of like, who am I? You know, and for a lot of us, we think as individuals, we think as individual men or women. And again, there's truth there. There's truth in that reality. We are individuals. We bear the image of God. We are individual people who are called by God to live and be faithful with the individual gifts that we have. And so that's all true. The problem is it's a partial truth, because there are other elements to our identity that supersede our, that are equally as important, just as important as our individual identity. And I think part of this is just stems from the reality that we did not choose to be born. Like everything that is most important about you and most central to you maintaining your life, you had no part in choosing. You didn't choose when to be born, where to be born, to whom to be born. Just all of these things. You didn't choose to have a functioning heart, lungs, brain, you know, kidneys, all of these things. Everything that is most central to who you are, you did not choose. You had no part in choosing. You had no part in deciding about those things. And so again, part of the reason, I mean, another example of this is you didn't choose your parents. You know, you didn't choose to be born. Your parents, to varying degrees, chose to have you. Your mother, again, this is a stark and sad reality. It's like we're seeing now more than ever, I don't know. That's even debatable, but now more than ever, but you're seeing just the choice that women have to, to kill their children. This is something that has always existed, but now I would imagine a greater percentage, now happening than ever before. Certainly the approval and applauding at high levels of society, you see it happening. And so, I just think the reality of the fact that, again, individuals are important, but the most important unit of measure within God's economy is the family. Like, God, the first thing God did, he created individuals, and then shortly thereafter, he made a family. And so again, we live in a culture that pits those two things against each other and acts like the individual identity is the identity that supersedes and is more important than everything else. And so we the article that Rigney mentions, quotes that C.S. Lewis, it also is kind of building off an idea that Pastor Doug Wilson has talked about, the idea of like atomistic individualism, which is part of where our title comes from. So this idea of like the fundamental model that we use to think about ourselves is very atomistic, as in the atom is the smallest unit of the building block of all things, and so we think about that. And yet the metaphor that the scriptures go to over and over again to describe and to shape how we think about what it means to be human is much more organic than that. So it's something more of like a tree. People are called, Psalm 1 talks about a righteous man is like a tree who produces fruit in its season. And so we see these metaphors. And so these are much more organic. These are much more interconnected. So a tree relies on its roots. It relies on soil. It relies on things that are outside of its outside of its control. It requires sunshine and rain. And so there's far more interconnectedness at the root of what it means to be human than the atom metaphor actually conveys. And so this is something where, again, we need to find the freedom that comes with, you know, learning from God what is an apt metaphor, what is a more truthful metaphor, a more broad in all-encompassing metaphor, and then allow him to train how we think about ourselves and how we think about what it means to be human. Do you want to do this Michael Foster, or do we want to kind of skip it because we've kind of already?
Yeah, I mean, you could do the what I quoted from his.
Yeah, let's see here. Is that
so? Just right at the end, he makes the point, and he talks about the different seasons in their family life, and particularly times of poverty, times where like during the 08 crash, they had to move back in with family and live in a basement, and just the struggles and the lean years, and how it's as he looks back on it, he shares this. He says, "It all starts small. It snowballs. It grows. So put your hand to the work and don't despise the day of small beginnings." And then I added to that from Ecclesiastes, "Better is the end of a thing than its beginning, and the patient in spirit is better than the proud in spirit." And it just struck me as I look back on my own family life. So we'll celebrate 20 years this year. And I mean, for the first time, we're going to be able to get to travel. We're going to go to Switzerland and have some time as a couple together, and just remembering some of the crazy lean years, very challenging seasons, and how faithfulness, or in its contrast, sinfulness, it starts small, and then the power of exponential growth, which is Bitcoin, as you understand that, of just hodling. And how it's not a passive thing. It needs to be an active effort to work. And the same thing happens when you make decisions in your marriage, in your parenting, of just like the small little things of faithfulness, of what do you do when you get home from work? Or how do you tuck your kids in at night? How do you pray with your wife? Like, there's just little things. How do you do family devotions? What's your pattern of church attendance? How do you discipline your kids? There's all these little things that that's you're like, I'm going to do this 50,000 times over my lifetime. But the exponential result of those 50,000 little faithfulnesses in the moment, what in the moment was an annoyance, or like this is genuinely inconvenient, actually is what snowballs into a really fruitful life. So I'm thankful for him sharing that. And I know you guys have stories like that as well. I'd love to hear them.
Yeah. Yeah. My wife and I just celebrated 21 years of marriage this last week. And yeah, I mean, that's a really powerful point. Like, things that are seemingly insignificant. It's like the little time of prayer with your wife. It's how your family starts your day. It's the moments that you put into your schedule for your kids, the conversations, things like that. In and of themselves, each one, it doesn't seem like, oh, it's this giant mountain of importance. But yeah, you're right. Like, what happens when that compounds over 2, 3, 5, 10 years? It's massive. Yeah. Like, if you want to talk about like where you're going to see fruit after 5 or 10 years of faithfully doing something, it's going to be those things that you faithfully do every day. Mm-hmm. And so, man, if I could pass on, and I think you guys would probably agree, but it's like pass on advice to younger couples, especially all those things that seem kind of insignificant, they're actually extremely important. And like, do whatever it takes to faithfully do them every single day, like intentionally. And it's exactly, it's like stacking sets. I mean, one of the reasons we talk so much about parenting and kids and stuff on this podcast is like, our treasure isn't Bitcoin. And at the end of the day, like, we could stack all the Bitcoin in the world and, you know, forfeit our soul. Like, that's not where we're at. And so like, anyways, that's why we talk so much about all these other things, because it's so much, all these other things are so much more important than Bitcoin. But yeah, the small things, do them faithfully, get into the habit, the rhythm of doing them every day. And yeah, just like stacking sats, you're going to reap the reward of your faithfulness.
And the other, I mean, again,
yeah, and don't, yeah,
I was just to say the other thing that the temptation for people who hear both of these excellent and very true and good points is, it's one going to be one of a couple things. Could be frustrating. Could be just like mocking, like, okay, you know, that's so easy for you, blah, 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 which is all silly. On top of that, it could also just be like, well, that's impossible. That's impossible for normal people. You don't know my situation. And, or you could be somewhat more heartbroken posture than that, is like, well, hey, I've made bad decisions. You know, I've sowed lots of bad seeds. And so what do I do? And the thing that I would encourage you with, as somebody who's made bad decisions, you know, for all my good ones, you know, I've made bad ones too. And it's just like, don't underestimate, like, do not underestimate the joy that God gives and that God gets from, you know, basically from taking somebody who humbly comes and just basically confesses their utter lack of deservedness to make up for lost time. You know, there's a, one of the passages that in the scripture where it talks about God restoring the years that the locusts have eaten. And so again, it's just this idea of you've planted, you worked, the locust destroyed everything left. You just ravaged it, left nothing. And the Lord just loves to make up for lost time and to, you know, to reap, in ways that only he can. And so, again, just like pouring out your heart before the Lord in whatever area it is, whether it's your marriage or parents or parenting or whatever it is, again, the Lord, he can do a lot with a little. And again, it's a similar thing to compared to Bitcoin. There's people who are looking at Bitcoin at 112,000. They're like, well, this is pointless.
Yeah, I missed it.
Like, this is pointless. I screwed up Bitcoin. I missed it. I missed my opportunity. And they can just get jaded and just quit. And again, it's never too late in the case of your family. It's never too late to do the right thing. You know, this isn't just like, I want this outcome in the end. It's like, no, the Lord is good and true and worthy of your worship and worthy of your obedience and trust and all these kind of things. And, he's fully capable of just doing way more than you can ask or think. So take heart.
Yeah. Did that was a big part of my, I want to say it was five, 6 years ago. I had, the Lord really convicted me just in like areas that I had been lacking in leadership, especially in our family. And it was super sobering because like my boys were becoming teenagers and I felt like, dude, what in the world? I totally screwed up. Like, I missed out. Like, I blew it in a lot of these areas, just not being consistent, not leading well. And but I humbled myself before the Lord and cried out for help. And you're 100% right, Jordan. Like, the Lord loves to redeem the time. And I definitely would say the last 5 years, I was very intentional spending a lot of extra time with my kids and my family, just trying to make up for some of the years that I didn't do a good job. And I feel like that can be done at any age. I mean, don't be discouraged. Like, be encouraged that you're having things exposed in your heart, and trust the Lord to redeem things going forward.
Yeah.
All right. Amen. We are 50 minutes in here. I'm going to make an executive call here. We're going to postpone the conversation about the about the Ukrainian girl. Man, I don't, if you guys have been following that story, just absolutely heartbreaking, infuriating. Just a lot of honestly downstream consequences of a lot of the things we've been talking about. So we'll push that till the next episode with the Island Boys here. In conclusion, we got a couple other short ones we can do. So one of them was this example here, or was this tweet, or this is a story. I think somebody tweeted about it and then it ended up finding its way. I don't know. I actually have the tweet. I have, let's see here. It is about the American dream. Let's look here. The American dream, the 2025 American dream will cost you $5 million. And thanks to the Opportunity Cost app, we can see that as of today, that would be 44.91 Bitcoin. Now, again, you may be thinking to yourself, what in the world does that consist of? Here we are right here. The American dream, including home ownership, retirement, raising children, a wedding. Listen to these. Look at these people who have not reproduced at all. A wedding, my word. New cars, healthcare, pets, annual vacations. Now roughly totals $5 million. Okay, ready? This is hilarious. Here we go. These calculations assume a college-educated dual income. Here we go. That we just talked about. Assume college-educated dual income household capable of sustaining these ambitions. That's not all they're anticipating. Here we go. Their retirement alone, $1.6 million. Look what they're accounting for. Accounting for a 2.5% annual inflation increase. Wouldn't that be nice? Wouldn't we all just kill for a 2.5 real inflation increase? Again, this is bonkers.
We've got to start at the top. Let's start at the title of this article, yep, down to some of the details. How many things are anti-marriage, anti-human?
Yeah, let's go. Here we go.
I'll start at the top, the 5 million figure. Yep. It's literally the most sensational, the American dream. It's like, well, you're not going to be able to have a family. You're not going to be able to.
Your
like,
life
five
is
million
ruined,
dollars.
Ryan, unless you have defeated. $5 million.
You only live once, go on the cruise, go gambling. Like, you're not going to be able to do it. $5 million. It's like everyone just checks out. If anyone who's actually still paying attention to the mainstream media is like checked out right off the bat.
Oh, yeah. And then scroll down where it lists raising kids and how expensive they are.
Okay, yeah, it's going to be great. Hold on. So we already mentioned, okay, so a wedding. Now, again, how many weddings are we going to have between the three of us, Lord willing?
Oh,
let's see. Oshawa's 8, Ryan's 6, and Jordan's 5 so far. So we might as well just quit right now. We might as well just give up, guys. It's doomed.
So hold on. Like, go back up. Every single one of these things is like, it's hard to, like, what some people spend on some of these things, yeah, is like 5 to 10 times more. And obviously there's more, yeah, even higher than what it can cost. Yeah. Like being a part of a local church where you have a community helping you pull off the wedding, sometimes you can get the venue, you get married. Hey, like actually getting married in your church, like your church probably isn't going to charge you, $4,000 or $5,000. Yeah. Like the whole thing about destination wedding. But like new cars, buy 20, 30-year-old cars, healthcare, that's like eat healthy food. You by God's grace, you won't need, like, again, every single one of these, don't, like, pets, they're anti-human. They're so stinking expensive. Somebody needs to do research on them. The more pets people have, the less kids they can have. They're so stinking expensive. And again, they're just, like, I remember 20 years ago, I had a mentor of mine, he was like super down on pets. And I was like, man, it's so weird. And it's like, but he was super up on having kids. And I actually see it. They're at war with each other. Like if push comes to shove and you have a whole bunch of pets, like they're really, really expensive. It's like to take care of, to feed, vet bills and stuff like that. And it's like, oh, well, we can't afford to have any more kids. Anyways.
Yeah.
So, but you just keep going, and it's like every single one of them is just like, if you have this, like, the world's view of all these things, like, yeah, it's extremely expensive unless you have other priorities. Yep. So,
yeah, again, just you're like, who is setting these standards? Like, who is saying this? What is the measuring stick they're using? It's totally unsustainable. So there's healthcare, $414,000, Ash. If you don't have that, have fun staying poor. You're good to go. Again, this is just totally overlooking. Now, again, it is true that it is expensive to eat healthy. Like, that's the sad reality. It is expensive to eat healthy, but there's ways to do this much more economically. If you, again, have prioritized and with your house, you bought a house that gives you a little bit of land, you can grow even with relatively small amount of land, you can grow vegetables to significantly bring down your food costs.
Chickens, eggs.
Yeah, chickens, eggs. There's, I mean, just a bunch of things that you can do to significantly chip away at this. First of all, chip away at your food costs. But then also on top of that, the downstream effects is you can take care of your health care, you know, at the same time. So again, this is just like if you just fiat to the max, you just just ignore causes of things, ignore causation, and just try to solve everything with spending the most money possible. This is what it would look like.
A lot. I would probably. What do you guys say? The percentage of healthcare costs that are directly tied to eating just trash food.
I mean,
it's, oh yeah.
80?
Yeah.
90%?
Sure. Like,
just eat really, really healthy and just go down the rabbit hole.
Well, yeah. Look at the greatest causes of death, right? It'd be like heart disease. That's pretty much totally food. You've got like cancers and stuff like that. That's a lot of that has to do with food. Another thing, like not fasting, like the fasting is one way to help these things. And, you know, the scriptures talk about it a lot. Pretty much every religion talks about it a lot. The United States does it, and so that's going to have downstream consequences. Home ownership. Check this out, guys. You know that if you don't have $1 million, you're not able to have a home. Here we are.
It's crazy. This is why, again, if you have a culture that puts up with an absolute 100% broken housing system, they're putting up with our culture being anti-human.
Yeah.
Because they're absolutely right. I mean, when you make housing like too expensive for people and especially families to afford, guess what? They have smaller families or no family at all.
You guys want to mention anything about the raising children in college thing here?
Well, I did the math on this and it's $40,000 a year per kid averaged out over 22 years. If you're paying for college.
Nice.
How are we doing? So Ash, are we doing it? Are we under or over budget?
40,000
a year per kid.
So basically what you're saying is in order to be a parent, you have to have Bitcoin or else you're not going to be able to be a good parent. That you can't. They're making the case for Bitcoin before our very eyes.
The thing that killed me is when I found out that because we've homeschooled our kids all the way through. I found out that the public education system gets like anywhere between like $15,000 and $20,000+ per student per year. And I'm just looking back, my honey, how much do we spend per kid per year? And it's like not even $100. It's like $100 maybe on a few workbooks and some books. It's like, but then the results that we've gotten. At like one, whatever it is, I don't even know. One one-hundredth or one 1,000th the cost.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a, in Florida, there is a scholarship program whoever put it through is basically, it's not fair that homeschool families have to continue to contribute to public schools. Like we're not taking advantage of them. Why in the world are we paying for them? And so the solution was basically to say, all right, we're going to give homeschool families $7,500 per student in order to cover and like help cover homeschool costs and stuff like that. And so there's a lot of this that's like, wait, I mean, again, it makes sense. You're like, okay, you know, it's still, we're like $2,500 short because the state still gives $10,000, I believe, a little bit more than that, $10,000 for every public school student. That's where that money goes.
That's in Florida.
That's in Florida. So the homeschool parents
it's 15 to 20 per student in Oregon.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's like every state's different, but it's like, it's insane.
Yeah. But so again, we're still getting jobbed by about $2,500, but even still, I mean, it's, you just look at this and you're like, man, this is our tax dollar. This is how much money every year like is that we're spending on these things. Like it's crazy, man.
Yeah.
misallocated resources.
Yep.
It's the biggest waste of money ever.
Do we have anything else here? New cars. Yeah. How many, have any of you guys bought a new car ever?
No.
Neither. Never bought a new car.
When I least could afford it, I did.
Yeah.
As a college student, I remember you had a nice Tundra as like a broke college student, Ryan.
He was car rich and portfolio poor.
He's matured a lot over the years. I want to say that.
Yeah. No, I think our average car is 20 plus years old.
Yeah. We actually have a newer car. We got back from the States, but we literally bought at the top of the vehicle market in 2021 or 2022, I think. The worst timing ever. And so our interest rate is awful on the loan. Like the whole thing, it was just horrendous. We just were thinking, we don't want to get something that's not good quality and then have to owe a bunch on it, whatever. I would recommend, again, the economics of this are getting not great, but if you can afford one of those extended warranties, this saved our bacon with this van multiple times over. I think it cost us $2,500. And I think we spent at least like eight grand worth of repairs on this thing. And so it ended up being a tremendous deal.
I shared, if anybody has to buy older Toyotas, that's like the, I think I shared a meme about it. It's like the mid-curve one. It's like,
yeah. BMWs and Jaguar, all these things are in the middle. And then on the both sides, it's Toyotas.
They cost a little bit more money. It's because they basically never break and they last forever. And so save yourself a mountain of money by just buying older Toyotas.
Yeah.
And spend your resources elsewhere.
Annual vacations. Ash, you just mentioned that you're taking your first vacation with your wife. Right? That's what you're...
No. We've done family vacations. I just came back from a road trip across the country for a month.
Yes. I'm talking about like what these people who wrote this article would consider a real vacation. You're taking your first one here.
We go to Hawaii.
That's what you get when you marry a
Bitcoiner.
You get one vacation for 20 years.
I'm not saying this in judgment. I'm saying like, listen, we've never done like a proper, you know, like vacation, thousands of dollars vacation either. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's that one. What else we got here? Owning pets. This is hilarious. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
We need to talk about on another call, early retirement extreme and some of those life hacks for living efficiently, for thinking frugally and being wise. So Bitcoin solves the excess cash flow and savings.
Yeah.
But there's some other things there to think through of how not to just buy into the consumer system. And the honest is, if we're advocating for large families, it really is expensive.
Yeah.
Like, it's expensive. I tell guys in my church, hey, above three is free, right? And there are efficiencies of scale within having kids. But it doesn't change the fact that life has gotten more and more expensive. And so how do you think through doing that well is worth talking about.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Let's see. I think that's everything. Man, we have another fun topic to talk about. This is what are these alienation of affection lawsuits? Man, we could get into so many things. Those are basically, there's six states in these United States where you can sue. Like if somebody, you know, cheats on your partner, if somebody like home wrecks your family, you can sue them and get basically a civil lawsuit and make money off of it. This is something we're gonna talk about. We don't have time. We'll have to save that for another day. We are grateful for you guys. Grateful for your listening to episode 28 of To the Unknown Pod, part of the Thank God for Bitcoin podcast. We will join you. We'll be back, I believe, again this week. We'll have Tim and Jim. Jim will be fresh off of a retreat with some of the best and brightest in Bitcoin. He's been hanging out in the woods with these guys talking about who knows what. And so we'll get him back for a debrief and that'll be lots of fun. And who knows what Tim's doing? Tim's reading books almost assuredly. So Those of you who look forward to the our Mountain Presbies, they'll be back on Thursday. So grateful for you guys. Ash, Ryan, appreciate you guys. I'll let you guys have the last word. Go for it.
Thank God for Jesus.
Amen.
Yeah.
TGFJ.
I will do one more thing here. So this coming Tuesday, we are going to be sitting down for an episode with Doug Casey. I'm sorry, not Matt Smith. Doug Smith, Doug Casey and Matt Smith wrote this book called The Preparation. We're talking about college and the cost of college. These guys wrote this book. They have basically a different approach to the college years and what it looks like to prepare to go out into the world. This is not anything what you're expecting. I listened to a couple podcasts. Matt recorded a podcast with Tom Woods, who's an Austrian economist and Roman Catholic guy and super interesting. And what's his name? Tom Woods came away from this. There's a clip from this interview where he said, I have all the degrees, all the fancy education from all the places that anybody would want. I would trade it in a heartbeat to do, like, to implement the plan that you guys have laid out in this book. And so I just reached out to Matt. I got the book and then reached out to him, and he's like, hey, I'd love to come on. So he's going to come on Tuesday, this coming Tuesday, a week from today. And we're going to talk about what that plan looks like, what it doesn't look like, and what his son's experience has been as kind of the guinea pig of this plan. So lots of really
sounds
cool
great
and thoughtful things, especially if you've appreciated anything that you've heard from these podcast episodes, you're going to love. I walked away just stunned. I was like, this is the coolest thing I've ever heard of in my life. So we'll talk to him on the next episode with the Who Are You Together, the Island Boys on Tuesday. So we'll see you guys then. We appreciate y'all.